Vegan, and I apologize for not wearing red, and I see my cohorts around here. We should have had red carnations or something, so I apologize for that. But welcome to the Senate Committee on Health Policy and Public Affairs on this Valentine's Day and Oregon's birthday, February 14th, 2007. I would now like to open a public hearing on Senate Joint Resolution 20. Pardon?
Do you need to do a subcommittee?
Oh, yes, and we are now in subcommittee because we do not have a quorum. Okay, Shannon, would you give us a description of the bill?
SJR 20 declares a state policy to promote and facilitate activities by Oregon's healthcare and education communities and their telecommunications providers to develop a network model that provides standards for interoperability.
All right. Senator Nelson, would you please start us out?
Okay. Thank you, Chair. My name is David Nelson, State Senator of District 29. I'm here in support of Senate Joint Resolution 20, brought forth to you by the request of the Oregon Telecommunications Coordinating Council. This resolution will help fast-track a FCC-funded Oregon Health Network grant. We have some people in the audience that know a lot more about it than I do. So I would turn it over to them. Basically, it's access to high-speed telecommunication infrastructure for access to health care. That's the bottom line of this whole thing. Better health care, better access. We need money to do that, and we need a federal grant. And this, if we could fast-track this bill, this would be very important, I think, for this group to get their federal funding. So with that, Chair, I'll hurry out of your way and let some real experts testify.
That sounds great, and thank you, Senator Nelson. Senator Nelson and I have a real interest in this area and have sort of worked with telecommunication things for several years together, actually.
Absolutely.
Okay. Thank you. Next. Okay, we now have a quorum, so we are now in full committee. I'd like to call John Dolan. Should I have all of you come together? Sure. Okay, and Kim Hoffman and Andy Easton.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm Kim Hoffman. I think I'll speak first. I want to thank you for the opportunity to speak with you this morning on Senate Joint Resolution 20. My name is Kim Hoffman. I am the telehealth coordinator for OHSU and also an ex officio member of the ORTCC. But I'm speaking today on behalf of the Telehealth Alliance of Oregon in support of this joint resolution. The Telehealth Alliance of Oregon, in case you're not familiar with our group, is a not-for-profit group dedicated to the advancement of telehealth throughout Oregon. And as a background, if you're not real familiar with telehealth, it's comprised of two components: telemedicine, which basically is the delivery of remote clinical services, such as diagnosis, patient consultations, the sharing of electronic patient health records, and also distance health education to patients, providers, and other community members. Today, because of the healthcare shortage in many of our rural communities, delivery of these telehealth services is fairly important. It allows for patients that might not otherwise have access to specialized care or sometimes even basic care to have access to those services and have access to quality healthcare services. Distance health education gives opportunity for students to have their education in their home communities, and we're hoping by doing that we can encourage them to stay there for their healthcare careers. In order to provide these telehealth services, it's real important that we have access to high-speed quality connectivity for all of our hospitals, clinics, public health buildings, universities, community colleges, even in our urban areas. Currently in Oregon, we have a whole bunch of networks. Our health systems like Providence, Samaritan Health, Peace Health, Cascade Health Services, they all have networks that connect their hospitals together. We have a a high-speed network in Southern Oregon called the Southern Oregon Medical Network that was instituted by Asante Health System and others that provides access, up to a gigabit of access, actually, to hospitals, clinics, imaging centers in that area. Our OUS Neuro system provides access to all of our universities and also to community colleges and our ESDs. Not all of our community colleges, but some. And then, of course, we have a state network that connects all the state facilities, particularly the prison systems, where there's also a need for remote health care. Tao, working with the leadership committee and a stakeholder group representing a whole bunch of people throughout the state from the education and healthcare communities, telecommunication providers, and others, is currently working on putting together a sustainable business plan to create an Oregon health network. Our intention is to create basically a network of networks connecting all of our health systems, educational networks, et cetera, together in a reasonable way to create something that we're going to call the Oregon Health Network. And the intent, again, is just to allow access to every clinic in Oregon, even if it's an enterprise where currently there's hardly any access, so that they can have access to the same services everyone else can. We're including a technology plan that will interconnect our existing networks, and I think John will have some statements more reasonably about that than I do. But we're including a technology plan that will interconnect our existing networks, and will create and expand access points throughout Oregon. We have a lot of infrastructure already in Oregon through the Quest, the Senate Bill 622 project that happened a few years ago. We have a lot of backbone, and through work of telecom providers like LS Networks. But we also have a number of, actually more than a number, a lot of clinics and hospitals that simply don't have access to that high-speed backbone, and that's what we're trying to do. By putting together a business plan, we are intending to use this as a model for an application to the FCC for their new pilot program funds. They'll fund up to 85% of the cost of putting in a statewide health network, and we want to try to get access to those funds. If we are not successful with that process, then we'll certainly try to find funding in other ways.
And that is the reason why we need to hurry this through, because it will help the application process if we have the resolution. So when we, I would like to work session, if it's at the pleasure of the committee, work session this today, just so that we can get it over to the House and have it expedited.
Yes, and we would appreciate that. The OMB is supposed to
and OMB is?
The Office of Management and Budget.
Yeah. Yes, the rule has to be approved by OMB, and we're expecting it to come out sometime this week. We then have 60 days to complete the work to get our business plan in place and submit our application. And it's really a terrific opportunity for Oregon. Yeah, it would be. We've actually been thinking about doing. Well, not thinking. We've been trying to come up with ways to do something like this for a number of years, and this is just a real good opportunity to come up with some funding to do it. So, on behalf of Tao, I'd like to reiterate our support, certainly, and just urge you to see if we can move it along. Thank you so much.
My name is John Dolan. I'm the Associate Director of Network Services for Oregon State University, and I'm here representing the Oregon University System. Madam Chairwoman, members of the committee, I come before you today to speak about Senate Joint Resolution 20, which promotes and facilitates activities by Oregon's education and healthcare communities, which OUS has been part of. This resolution represents the coming together of the education and healthcare communities to solve similar and sometimes overlapping problems in various parts of the state. Pieces of the required infrastructure are in place today, but there is much more work to do. To help bridge this gap, these communities are already working together to forward a response from Oregon to the anticipated FCC order making funds available for statewide rural telemedicine networks. In support of that effort, OUS is currently participating in groups looking at a network architecture which allows connections between existing education, healthcare, and private networks, a governance model for a statewide rural health network, a sustainable business model for that statewide rural health network. We're doing this in the context of applying for federal money. However, the work being done here is good for the state of Oregon and should be encouraged and sustained. And despite Kim's warning earlier, I won't bore you with technobabble. I will sit here and answer any questions you might have of me. Thank you.
Any questions?
Okay.
Yes, Senator Carter.
Well, no, when she finishes up.
Okay.
Good morning, Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm Andy Easton, Director of Advocacy for the Oregon Association of Hospitals and Health Systems. And today, on behalf of our 57 hospitals, the patients we serve, and our health systems, we thank you for hearing SJR 20. The association is supportive of SJR 20, for it brings access to the most rural communities of Oregon. And we are here to support that. Thank you.
All right.
Madam Chair, it's really interesting that this piece is coming before us today because the President had assigned a group during the interim to work on issues of emergency preparedness, and we were dealing with the issue on interoperability and also as it relates to emergencies and the nature of that. And so I'm really very pleased to see this as well, because if hospitals and educational institutions are already geared up, maybe the anticipated cost to the state that this project, this architectural design that we have for this interoperability across the state, the cost would go down. But more than that, in case of emergencies, these folk are in touch with each other, and that certainly would be a grand place for us in case of any kind of emergency. And so I'm certainly willing to support you going into a work session on this so we can fast forward and facilitate this opportunity to happen.
Okay.
Madam Chairwoman, in response to Senator Carter's comments, I'd also like to point out that part of the architectural design has been based upon the statewide HRSA region, so that we are, in fact, looking forward to interoperability on multiple fronts, not just education and healthcare, but also emergency response.
Now, I really like that, Madam Chair.
And what I need you to help clarify for me, though, we have the OWIN project, Oregon Wireless Interoperability
Network.
And how does this correlate with that at all?
Madam Chairwoman, at this point in time, it's not clear the direct correlation. Some of the invested infrastructure that is built out to create that statewide wireless network for an emergency response is primarily geared for voice interaction today,
police
and police to interact over a digital medium, but specifically for voice communications in an emergency.
Mm-hmm.
We may be able to leverage some of the tower space if parts of the network have to be built out wirelessly. And specifically what we are asking for in the FCC order will be hard assets to be able to tie the existing networks mm-hmm. together. We will, of course, once we get that in place, need to be able to expand and look at how we connect to each rural hospital, each clinic. And in some of those cases, we may have to look at wireless connections, and we may look to the OWIN network to see if there's an opportunity for collaboration there. But there isn't, at this point, a direct overlap.
And I think it's important for all of these different, I mean, that OWIN project is, what, the latest figure was 600,000?
650.
Yeah, 600 million. Yeah. Yes, million.
Yes.
And so, you know, I hate to have us build silos that then wouldn't be able to work well with the grand scheme of things. And so.
And Madam Chairwoman, I might also point out that the biggest stumbling block to be able to create this collaboration in the past has not necessarily been the physical infrastructure. It's been working out a sustainable business model and a governance model that all parties could agree to and work
mm-hmm,
within.
Mm-hmm.
That work is what we're engaged in today, and that is the most significant part of what we're doing today. As a bit twiddler, I can create all sorts of networks, and the technical pieces are easy to me. The business model and the governance model are the most difficult part. If we can get that settled, we have a great framework to build an interoperable network going forward.
And Madam Chair, I'm really glad to hear him say that, because that was the struggle in New Orleans, working out the governance pieces and being able to get people to agree in terms of how each person would respond and use it, and each government being able to give the okay for that. So I'm in agreement with him. If there's anything the legislature could do, and certainly, Mr. President, you could facilitate that in making all the players come to the table to talk about such an arrangement, because I don't think any of us know when an emergency is going to happen. That's the nature of an emergency. And so I think that is one place. Now, hearing it from someone who is in the field, to bring those players to the table, because that's the only thing when you assigned us to the interim committee that kept us from going forward, and that is all the governance pieces from all the governments across the state, and I don't think that we can afford that luxury.
Senator Cruz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Carter and I and Senator Gordley were all on the interim committee, and once we got over the sticker shock of Owen,
yes.
and probably aren't clear over the sticker shock, but what I know, as they go forward, they are looking at all of the connections that can be made with county services, private services, and so I think we will, at the end of the day, see some connectability, but to a large degree, for that system to connect to this system, that's not necessarily on these folks, although they're going to need to cooperate. So, but I have a fair sense, and I've talked to some folks just this week on as they move forward with development, that they are going to be incredibly mindful of the resources already on the ground and the resources that are proposed out into the future. So hopefully we do have that sort of connection. But having said that, Madam Chair, that's no reason to not proceed with this.
Absolutely.
With vigor.
All right. Any further? Yes, Senator Gordon.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Just one quick question. I'm reminded that last session, Senator Devlin led efforts to gain passage of a virtual schools bill. And I'm wondering now if there's a connection, any intentional connection between this joint resolution and the virtual schools legislation that we passed last session.
Senator Gordley,
link.
To date, we have not linked those two together, but certainly any kind of network that we put together geared towards education and health care could possibly benefit what they're trying to do as
mm-hmm.
well. One of the things that we would like to do, in addition to providing health care education to community colleges and universities remotely, is also to connect to high schools, because one of the things that we have found is that if we can entice kids at a young age, particularly in rural communities, to get interested in science, that they may choose to make that their career. A few years ago, the scientists at OHSU actually did a remote learning experience for some kids in eastern Oregon, where they delivered sheep's brains and then through video conferencing did a class and actually let the kids bisect those brains to learn about the brain. And it was very effective. But without the kind of connectivity that we're looking for, that is much more difficult to do. So it could certainly benefit what they're trying to do.
Great. And just by way of follow-up, the Devlin bill was a wonderful piece of work. And if you all would just commit to taking a look at that legislation and helping us understand where the intersection is, that would be very helpful.
We'll do that, Senator Gordon.
Thank you. Thank you.
And Senator Gordon, I think I can speak to that directly. Mm-hmm. I'm not familiar with the bill itself. However, Oregon State University, in conjunction with our open source lab, is partnering with the Oregon Department of Education on the Oregon Virtual School District
mm-hmm.
project,
mm-hmm.
which I assume was
funded
out. Mm-hmm. The intersection then is that the servers that host that infrastructure are going to live at Oregon State University.
Hmm. Great.
Fantastic.
For them to interconnect with all the other communities we're talking about here, those networks have to connect to the Oregon, whatever network Oregon State University is connected to, and today we're connected to the Nero network, and interconnecting these does make those resources more readily available to everyone across the state.
Mm-hmm. You may want to reach out and connect Senator Devlin directly and just share this information with him. I'm sure he'll be very excited to know how his efforts are, and all of these efforts are advancing.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Any further discussion?
All right, there's no one else to testify, so I'd like to close the public hearing on SJR 20, and I'd like to open a work session on SJR 20.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Joint Resolution 20 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation.
Thank you, Senator Gourley. She moves SJR 20 to the Senate floor with a do-pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Yes, Senator Cruz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd just like to commend and compliment Senator Mona Sanderson for her diligent and hard work in this area over several sessions now, and we're seeing some very positive results. So thank you for your leadership.
Wow. Thank you, Senator Cruz. Okay. Little did I realize that when I came to the legislature that I would be getting involved in telecommunications, but I guess I'm the only one in my caucus that sort of likes this kind of stuff. All right. No further discussion. Clerk will call the roll.
Senator Carter?
Aye.
Senator Courtney?
Yes.
Senator Cruz?
Aye.
Senator Gourley?
Aye.
Chair Mona Sanderson?
Aye. Senate Joint Resolution 20 is declared passed, and Senator Nelson will carry the bill. I will close the work session in SJR 20, and I would like to open a work session on Senate Bill 163. Clerk will review the bill for us, please.
Senate Bill 163 permits the exchange of protected health information between health service organizations and state and the state health plan for purposes of provision of integrated behavioral and physical health care services. And we did have one amendment. We heard this bill last week and are here to discuss the amendment.
Can we have Walter Schaefer and John Pelkey come up, please?
Good morning, Chair Mona Sanderson, members of the committee. I am Walter Schaefer. I'm the medical director for the Division of Medical Assistance Programs at the Department of Human Services. I'll let John introduce himself.
I'm John Pelkey, the medical section manager for the Division of Medical Assistance Programs, and I just joined the state of Oregon this morning, so this is actually my first day.
Welcome.
And I'm accompanying Dr. Schaefer here. Thank you.
This is part of John's orientation. I submitted written and verbal testimony at the hearing last week, so I'm here today primarily to answer questions and further the support of this bill.
So just clarification. So the wording changes. It's a long sentence, but the last part of the sentence, for treatment activities of a prepaid managed care health services organization, when the prepaid managed care health services organization is providing behavioral or physical health care services to the individual?
It should say and or.
And or. Mm-hmm.
That's not how it came back.
That's not how it is.
That's not how it came back.
We deleted and.
That was the...
I was wondering about that.
Yeah, the proposed amendment by COHO, which was supported by DHS, had the and or connectors.
Okay. Well, we committee. Unfortunately, I didn't read this until this morning, and so I didn't catch it earlier. Otherwise, we could have had another draft submitted. But I think we need to have it in proper form before we can work session it out. I know we could. It's permissive, but to me, integrated behavioral and physical health is extremely important to me. I feel it's a holistic approach, and to say integrated behavioral or physical health just goes against migraine. So if
I would agree. Mm-hmm.
Is that all right? Mm-hmm. So, yes. There's someone in the back that would like to come and speak.
Cindy Becker.
Please introduce yourself for the record.
Chair, members of the committee, I'm Cindy Becker, Executive Director of the Coalition for Healthy Oregon. The original bill limited the provider to only those providers who provided both physical and behavioral health services. The purpose of the amendment was to allow providers who provided either one of those to be able to communicate with each other around the same individuals. So, because right now there is only one provider that provides both of them, but we wanted to be able to have a provider who was a mental health organization that may only be providing mental health services, be able to communicate with a fully capitated health plan around the same individual. So that was the reason. We had the and or, so it could be a provider who provided both or a provider who provided one. So I don't know if the or covers both of those categories or not. We had submitted the and or in our amendment, but that was the purpose of it.
Madam Chair, I don't think it does. If it's basically without the and there, it's one or the other, it's not both.
That's
so
right. Mm-hmm. We want to be able to accommodate either situation.
All right. So rather than having you have to come again to testify for the next work session, I think that if we get that back, look very closely again to the amendment when it comes out of LC. Make sure. Oh, you haven't seen it. Okay, we just got it. So that's the problem. All right. So just for process question, when the amendments come back and we immediately get them up to Shannon, then Shannon will then immediately call you to look at it, and so that we can try and get this clarified before we actually come into work session. So that'll be very helpful. Okay?
Madam Chair, yes. It'd be a very simple amendment. The amendment stands, except we just remove and delete and. So it would be to delete it, integrated, and insert or. So it's incredibly simple. I think we won't even need any testimony on it. We'll just need to adopt it and pass it.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Senator
but
Carter.
I think this is good indoctrination for welcoming you to this process, to know that there are imperfections.
And words mean things.
So. All right. I'm sorry that... But it will be no problem in getting it passed next time around. All right. Thank you. I'll close the work session on Senate Bill 163, and I'll open a, let's see, are we going into work session or public hearing? A work session on Senate Bill 341. And I'd like to have Grant Higginson come up. I think that Senator Carter and I, once we heard that hospitals are only inspected once every 8 years when they should be inspected once every 3 years,
right,
it just raised our hackles in a sense. And we asked the department why this is happening, and it's because the overall inspection program is not adequately financed. So we are going to, Senator Carter and I are meeting with Dr. Bruce Goldberg to discuss this issue, but it isn't going to prevent us from passing this. But passing this, we certainly don't want the department to think that we are piecemealing it. This is a part of an overall plan to get that program back to where it should be for Oregon's public safety.
Right.
Heaven's sakes. Go ahead.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Dr. Grant Higginson, and I am the administrator for the Office of Community Health and Health Planning, State Public Health Division, Department of Human Services. And I am here today to be in support of the concept of the bill. However, we do need to remain officially neutral due to the fiscal impact. And I apologize for not being able to be here the last time when Senate Bill 341 was discussed. But as originally written, which would require simply for us to draft some rules identifying a nationally recognized accrediting agency for tissue banks and tissue services and their staffs. This would have been a very small fiscal impact for us. However, my understanding from the discussion at the last hearing, there was a hope that there would be much more in the way of regulatory oversight provided, and consequently, if that is the case, it would have a little larger fiscal impact. And as I said before, we need to remain neutral on this bill because that is not currently covered in the governor's recommended budget. I just wanted to provide very, very brief snapshot in where we are with licensing and certification of these facilities. Currently, our program, the Healthcare Licensing and Certification Program in State Public Health, does have responsibility for most healthcare facilities. We do provide periodic surveys of the two kidney transplant centers in the state. Both of those are located in Portland. However, the program has no regulatory oversight over the Pacific Northwest Transplant Bank. That is the only transplant bank we know of in Oregon. Also, there apparently are three tissue donation services in Oregon as well, and again, we have no regulatory oversight for those services and really don't have any additional information on what they're doing right now. Consequently, we do think that there is a gap in oversight here and would like to see the bill passed. That being said, however, we do have one concern, and that is, as you suggested, Madam Chair, we don't want to see this program redeveloped on a piecemeal basis, getting one chunk of oversight here and another piece from there. And as you mentioned, most of the 11 types of facilities that we currently regulate have a cycle of survey about every 6 to 8 years, which we agree, or at least I agree, is inadequate for adequate oversight. So what we would like to see happen is really to see a robust program developed here and one that can take on these kind of important responsibilities when indeed they come up. And I will just end by saying that I'm glad that you are talking to Dr. Goldberg. I believe that one of the positions that the department is going to hold is that the bulk of the funding for this program should come from the industry because that's what we're trying to support.
Absolutely.
And with that, I'll close and be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Dr. Higginson, for coming. And the way the bill is written, it doesn't state that you need to be out there banging the doors to make sure that it's that the regulations are being followed. But what it does say that you'll have to do is notify these banks and organizations, hospitals, that this is now statute. And I think that committee is why you received a minimal expenditure impact. I know the department said it may be $20,000 to contact everybody. Hopefully it will be less. But that's where we are on that. Is that your understanding also, Dr.?
Madam Chair, that is correct. The fiscal impact we came up with was $20,000, and I, too, hope it would be a little less. But it is going to require some work in developing rules and, as you say, doing the outreach and education piece.
And yes, Senator Cruz.
Just a question, Madam Chair. So to make sure I understand where you're going with all this, because I support this. I mean, this is all we're doing here is adding an accreditation piece, but you're having a broader discussion on inspection and
yes.
oversight.
Yes.
So this goes independent of that other discussion.
Exactly.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, Senator Carter.
Doctor, could you please elaborate on what you mean by periodic checks? How what's the distance or the gap between the time in which you check?
Madam Chair and Senator Carter, it depends on the particular facility, and actually it also depends on whether we're doing the inspection through federal dollars or through state dollars. Okay. For some facilities, and primarily ones where we have a mandate from the federal government where we receive the bulk of our funding, a lot of those are every 3 years. And so critical access hospitals, home health agencies, those would be every 3 years. For a number of other facilities, however, like birthing centers, ambulatory surgical centers, those we pick up with state dollars and we do as often as we can. And like I said, it's every six to 8 years right now is how often we can get to those. in the case of hospitals, and the majority of hospitals are accredited by the Joint Commission on Healthcare, Joint Commission on Accreditation of Healthcare Organization, we accept that survey as what we call deemed status. And so those facilities we go out very rarely to, and actually I think we need to go out at least periodically, but those are facilities that we don't get to like every once every 10 years. There have been some that we haven't visited for like 20 years.
And just
to be clear, there someone is. The Joint Commission is going out every 3 years, but I also think it's important for the state to have a regulatory presence over those people that we license and certify.
I think the Joint Commission is fine, but the Joint Commission's main responsibility is within their own association with the federal government. And I think a survey is fine, but it doesn't give you the Oregon eyes that we need, especially in today's environment where we're seeing more people coming out of hospitals with infections and some things that are happening, that we need an Oregon eye on this. And I think that it behooves us as a committee to look seriously at this department being able to, at least every 3 years, to be able to go in and inspect our hospital. I think it's a safety issue, a big safety issue that needs to be looked at. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yes. Madam Chair and Senator Carter, I would personally agree, and I'm not saying that we need to go out and do a redundant additional survey, but I would like to see state eyes being a part of those surveys so at least we know what those findings are and can do any follow-up work on the interim if we think that's needed.
Right. Dr. Higginson, can you remind me, and I don't remember what session it might have been, in 2001 or 2003, where there was a concern about dialysis centers, and I don't know, does the state have responsibility on inspecting those? Because I think it hit the media, and there wasn't really very good hygiene procedures being followed.
I do remember that situation, although I'm not sure what session it was. I believe it was 2001, but I'm not positive on that. And yes, that issue came up because there was a particular facility that had a number of problems that included some adverse outcomes to patients. And so at that time, we worked with the dialysis center industry and together came to the legislature and said, this is something that needs further regulation, and the industry was willing to pay the fees to have those facilities regularly inspected, and that is one facility we do every 3 years. And we think that right now that there is good oversight on dialysis centers.
Excellent. All right. So this is why we need to be following up and making our program strong.
But my chair, surgery centers are popping up. They are the new hospitals, if you will. Mm-hmm. And if indeed our public health department doesn't have any direction from us to be able to review them, because I was in a surgery center last year, just how happened, it was a very clean place, I felt comfortable with my doctor and stuff. But I tell you, I went in there wondering. You really, really do. And I agree with him. Industry should help pay for those centers to be inspected.
Thank you so very much.
Okay.
Yes, Senator Gordley.
Thank you. Before Dr. Higginson gets away, and good morning to you, can you tell us, with regard to what this measure would require, Senate Bill 341, how do we compare to Washington, California, Idaho?
Madam Chair, Senator Gordley, that's something I can't tell you today, but that's something that we will follow up on.
Okay. Thank you.
Any further discussion?
Yeah,
yes, Senator Cruz.
And this is just comments for the Ways and Means Subcommittee on Human Resources.
Yes, yes.
Not that I have any idea who's on that subcommittee.
I'm so glad you're on this committee.
but I think, Senator Carter, you made a very good point, because healthcare is now taking place in a lot of smaller settings.
Absolutely.
And it's not just surgery centers, there's a lot of them. And the oversight has to be ours. And so hospitals are one thing. Having the state connect into the process that already exists for inspection there, I think, is appropriate. But you need to be mindful of all these other settings and how we make sure that safety is accomplished in those, I think, is maybe even a higher level here.
Right.
So.
Okay, we are in work session. All right, thank you, Dr. Higginson. Any further discussion?
Madam Chair.
Yes.
I move Senate Bill 341 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Gourley moves the Senate Bill 341 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
Senator Carter?
Aye.
Senator Gourley?
Yes.
Senator Cruz?
Aye.
Senator Gourley?
Aye.
Chair Monson?
Aye. Senate Bill 341 is, having received the proper number, or constitutional number of votes, is considered passed. And Senator Walker and I will be co-carrying this bill. I close the work session on Senate Bill 341, and I'd like to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 229. And as I get the list, Shannon, would you describe the bill?
We removed 229.
I'm looking from the wrong agenda. We will close the public hearing on 229, and we're going to open the public hearing on Senate Bill 433. And Shannon, would you describe the bill, please?
Senate Bill 433 allows the Oregon State Board of Nursing to abstain from imposing discipline on licensees who voluntarily seek treatment for chemical dependency, emotional, or physical problems if the board finds that the licensee poses no danger to public health, safety, or welfare.
Okay. Pete Shepard and Alicia Juber. Hold it. Before you proceed, it would be nice if Senator Morissette starts us off. We are going to be in recess until he gets here.
He was in the room.
I call Senator Morissette to the dais.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
Senator Bill Morissette, Senate District 6, and Chair of the Health and Human Services Committee. We have, during the interim, been dealing with some issues that came before the Board of Nursing, and this is one of three bills that resulted from that hearing. This is a very simple bill, and I'll turn it over to Assistant District Attorney General. I was going to promote you to District Attorney back. Assistant Attorney General Pete Shepard, and he will talk about the changes.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I am the Deputy Attorney General, and would be honored to be a district attorney, but I'm not a district attorney.
You'll make more money.
I want to provide you with just a brief bit of background and then a very brief explanation of I think is a pretty straightforward bill. Last March, the Department of Justice and the Board of Nursing launched an examination of what's known as the Nurse Monitoring Program, or the NMP, as it you'll hear it referred to in the jargon of the area. We had a particular focus in that examination on interrelations between law enforcement investigators and prosecutors and the Board of Nursing's regulatory scheme for the 65,000-plus licensees that are under the board's direction as licensees of the board. That effort yielded two major written products, which are being distributed to you now. The first is a report dated in October, which we delivered to Senator Morissette's committee, and the second is a joint letter from the governor and the attorney general to Senator Morissette and his committee, his interim committee, urging support for additional funding to help the board more effectively discharge its responsibilities. With respect to Senate Bill 433, the amendment is a change to the basic statute which creates the nurse monitoring program. That program was created in 1991 by direction of the Legislative Assembly and is codified in two statutes, one of which is amended by the bill. These statutes establish the nurse monitoring program and authorize the board to charge a fee to operate the program. As of August 25th, 2006, the last date on which we had data for the report that we submitted in October, there 456 persons had successfully completed the nurse monitoring program. 226 had failed to the extent that they were returned to the Board of Nursing's disciplinary program, and 238 licensees were then currently participating in the nurse monitoring program. The gist of the program is that in exchange for the board's abstention from further investigation or adverse license disciplinary action against the licensee agrees to enter into a supervised program according to terms and conditions established by the Board of Nursing in the for the nurse monitoring program. And the board has established a fairly elaborate set of terms and conditions for participation and continuation in that program. But the first condition is a statutory condition, and that's created in ORS 678.112 sub 1, which is the statute that's amended by the bill that you have before you. Presently, the statute states that the board cannot admit a person to the nurse monitoring program unless the board finds, quote, that there is no danger to the public health, close quote. The Board of Nursing itself has described its mission in this area as extending beyond simply protection of the public health to include protection of the public health, safety, and welfare. Now, the statute doesn't presently condition participation on a determination by the board that the would-be participant can do so consistently with the public health, safety, and welfare. As I've indicated, it simply stops at public health. And those are different formulations because those formulations describe different conduct because a statute that conditions participation simply on the public health would not necessarily exclude, for instance, a person who had stolen property from a bedridden patient. That person would not necessarily present any risk to the public health, but could be characterized as presenting a risk to the public safety or welfare. And so simply put, what the bill does is add the three words, safety or welfare, in line 9 to the gateway statute for participating in the nurse monitoring program. That was one of the recommendations that emerged from the report we provided to the interim committee, and indeed it was the only statutory recommendation that we had directly arising from the committee's work. And with that, yes, I'd stand open for questions.
Senator Carter.
So, Mr. Shepard, if indeed there was an accusatory action against a nurse who might have gone awry of any ethics toward his responsibility and as the safety and welfare of a particular patient, it reminds me of the fox mine in the hen house. If the nurses are going to try to be the police and arbiter in this situation, so how can we have some kind of outside agency making this decision as opposed to the nurses? Because the one thing about us as human beings, we tend to protect our own.
Can I try that? At the beginning of our public hearings during the interim, I was somewhat under the opinion that the nurses somehow had undue influence over the Board of Nursing.
Mm-hmm.
One bit of evidence was submitted by the Nurses Association criticizing the Board of Nursing for being too aggressive in dealing with some of their issues. The second findings that I am made aware of was the fact that the Board of Nursing is an independent board. And I think because it has nursing tail, you know, as part of the title, that gives the impression that it is somehow under the auspices of the Nurses Association, which I don't believe they are. They deal with a number of caregivers, not just the nurses, but a number of caregivers who work in various institutions who take care of the elderly and other people, and so they have a broader jurisdiction than just the Board of Nursing. But I think that's That's a good question, because that has come up in the past. Secondly, I think the DOJ, they have two DOJs assigned. Is that correct, two of them?
One pretty much the principal contact.
Principal contract. Assistant contact, yeah. And they work with the Board of Nursing and have had their differences with the Board of Nursing on some occasions, which I think have been resolved by partly by an outside audit that was done to clarify the situation. But I will turn it back over to...
Just to follow up on that question. Yeah. I actually was a part of the committee that addressed this issue. I mean, I paid quite close attention to it. And I actually attended some of the meetings that they had in, was it an audit or just a...
Madam Chair, it was a, the preliminary examination of the rules that govern
yes.
the nurse monitoring program, a separate process than the one that DOJ produced this report, but one of a parallel process to that.
And No, I've actually had talks with Ms. Juber in her particular situation, but I agree with Senator Morissette that the Board of Nursing is doing really a very good job in addressing the discipline of nurses. It certainly isn't perfect, because when you're dealing with so many nurses, nurses can perform things that that may harm patients, but it isn't an outside agency wouldn't be able to deal with that situation any more effectively than the Board of Nursing's program is, in my estimation.
Another question, please. To add on to what I just asked you a few minutes ago, Pete, in terms of the legality of them, are there public members on the Board of Nursing?
Yes. Madam Chair, Senator Carter, there are. The statute, the Legislative Assembly has specified the composition of the Board of Nursing, as you have for a good many other citizen regulatory boards. In the case of the Board of Nursing, there are 9 members, and the statute provides that 5 shall be registered nurses, 2 of whom shall be licensed practical nurses, and 2 of whom shall be members of the public who are otherwise not eligible for appointment to the board. And indeed, that is the composition of the board, barring some vacancy in a position. We looked at, in our examination, we did look at other boards to see how the mix of players on the Board of Nursing matched up with other judgments the Legislative Assembly has made. And there are quite a large number of boards that include members of the public who are not regulated persons.
Right.
And so the State Board of Architect Examiners and the Board of Accountancy and the Board of Medical Examiners and a good many others, I believe, have a mixture of members on the board. We did look at the question of whether the board itself was at least institutionally, setting aside any individual case judgments that it may have made, but trying to make some assessment of institutionally whether it was inclined to be too protective or not. And we concluded in our report to the interim committee that we didn't really find evidence that the composition of the board impaired or would impair the development of good working relationships with law enforcement folks, which was the focus of our examination in that report. I also attended a number of the meetings of the Board of Nursing, and I did observe quite a lot of critical examination of the staff's recommendations to them, and it's an admittedly small window on their operation, but what I saw was some pretty close and independent judgments being made about the work of the staff of the board.
Follow up, Ms.
Yes.
How do we, let me just get on to brass tacks. I don't know anything except I've seen the other presenter sitting next to you come to my committee. How do we make citizens feel as if we, the state, is really taking their interest at heart?
Madam Chair, Senator Carter, I think that's a very good question for all of us in public service, and I'll tell you my personal answer, and that is that I think, first of all, we need to create meaningful opportunities for citizens to participate in shaping the policy of the agency or agencies that are involved. And we've, as you'll see in the report, I think that there we tried to create a number of different forums for citizens to bring forward concerns or challenges to the status quo. It seems to me that's a starting point. The second thing is to be, I think, directly accountable for following through on the recommendations that we all arrive at, and that's partly why I'm here today. Mm-hmm. In any event. I think the third thing, frankly, is to be as straightforward and honest with folks who have concerns about the way we've exercised our discretion, and to recognize that we're not always going to agree with their criticisms, and just be straightforward about that.
Yeah.
Those are the best answers I can give you, Senator.
Follow-up, Madam Chair.
Yes, please.
How do we see? I know if my father, if my child, or somebody had been injured by a nurse, and the welfare and safety was not taken into consideration, I wouldn't want that person to practice in the United States because I think they are a danger mm-hmm. to the safety and the welfare of our citizens. So how do we make sure that our regulatory agencies are making sure that this person is not fit for the profession? I think that becomes a question that is pretty onerous to people when we don't show them that we are not, as government, being clannish and trying to protect our own, but trying to seek the welfare of our citizens at large.
Madam Chair, Senator Carter, I am not the right person to ask about the intricacies of interrelationships between this board's regulatory authority and its co-equals in other states, question of interstate enforcement or national effect of a state action. I would defer that question to the Board of Nursing because I don't want to presume to answer for you.
And I'm just really not trying to talk about the board because they'll come before my committee and mm-hmm. I can do that. But I'm talking about the legal framework.
Mm-hmm.
How do we do that so that let's forget a case. Mm-hmm. Let's just say in general that that a legislator did harm to an individual that worked for them, and that the President of the Senate could call all kind of committees and task forces together, but if the general public doesn't feel as if they can trust the legislature to mind its own and to be fair in its regulatory action, how do we as citizens have some means, some alternative of being able to seek satisfaction in the sense that this legislator cannot go to another state and become a legislator again because of the harm that he inflicted in one state?
Madam Chair, Senator Carter, I think you're, as a general legal principle, what we can control by virtue of state law is how we treat people within, how we deal with folks who violate a standard of conduct, a law, or whatever, or an ethical standard for purposes of our law.
Okay.
And then the question is how other states deal with that issue.
Deal with that. Okay.
I would say that one thing that you can do specifically in this area is make sure that the agency has a statute that reflects the totality of what the Assembly expects of its judgment in monitoring, in establishing and running the nurse monitoring program. And that's why this bill is before you, to make sure that the agency understands from you that the nurse monitoring program is to be operated in a way that does not pose a danger to the public health, safety, or welfare, mm-hmm. which is not what the current law says.
Thank you, Chair. Yes.
Thank you. Did you want to...
No.
Just to add to the discussion, I have in front of me a letter from the Governor and Attorney General Myers dated October 5th, 2006, and it was a letter sent to Chair Morissette in his role as Chair of the Senate Interim Health Committee. And in this letter, both the governor and attorney general referenced the work of the independent consultant, the consultant that looked at the practices of the nurse monitoring program and other elements. And just a quote from their letter, they say, "We write in advance of your hearing to pledge our support for what we consider to be the most important conclusion emerging from these lines of activity. Quite simply, the Board of Nursing lacks the necessary resources to fully protect the public. To address this problem, the consultant recommends that the Legislative Assembly should, in the next session, authorize the Board of Nursing to hire a chief investigator to accelerate and improve, in other ways, investigations and possible discipline of licensees. The consultant also recommends that the Assembly authorize the Board of Nursing to hire additional personnel for the nurse monitoring program to permit improved monitoring of participants in the nurse monitoring program." And again, the Attorney General and Governor indicate that they support both recommendations. So the question comes back to us, are we going to follow up on those recommendations made by the consultant and endorsed by the Governor and Attorney General? You know, are these positions, they need to wind up in the budget is the point, in order for the nurse monitoring program to do what we say we want it to do, which is protect, to fully protect the public. That's our challenge.
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair, I will be carrying a bill on the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation from the Ways and Means Subcommittee that adds three positions to investigative positions, and we did hear that bill. We heard this concern in our Ways and Means Committee, and we do have additional positions added. There is one other safeguard that I have been working on with the Attorney General's office that is a bill which will give greater transparency to the Board of Nursing and all boards that deal with complaints from citizens and contractors, board and others. And my good friend Mr. Shepherd has helped me draft the language and is reviewing the language, but it would require that all complaints received are documented at the end of the year showing which ones have been heard, which ones have been resolved, which ones have been carried over, perhaps mentioning the penalties that have been, will it include penalties? But one of the concerns that I've had from other constituents is that they filed a complaint and they've never heard back whether or not the complaint is heard and where it is and so on and so forth. Now, there are hundreds of complaints. And I was impressed when I met with the board, with two members of the board, Joan Bouchard and Kim...
Cobreen,
yeah, that they have indeed started to do a much better job in doing the thing that we're asking of them. So the point of this and the goal of this is to have greater transparency, so if someone files a complaint, they could go online and perhaps take a look at what the Board of Nursing has and any other board has reported at the end of the year to find out where their complaint is. That would be available online. Confidentiality would be observed, but it would be greater transparency, which I think is the bottom line here. So if something is slipping by, people who are interested will know this and have an opportunity to ask the right questions. So do you want to add anything on that?
No, Senator.
Okay.
Just to let you know, the Board of Nursing puts out a publication, and I can't remember if it's quarterly, but it's quite often, and they list all of the nurses who who have had their license suspended, or they list those who are under drug and alcohol treatment. So there's a whole list of nurses. But that would be good, and I think that would be available online. So there are lists. But those complaints that come forward and you're not sure, I mean, obviously maybe they were found not valid complaints. And so those aren't listed online.
Yeah, Madam Chair. In my discussion with the Board of Nursing, I became aware of the fact that they do an excellent job of reporting, and my comment to them is I would like to use what they're doing as a model for other boards. For instance, I was on the Ways and Means Subcommittee of General Government last time, and we heard from the Board of Contractors, and I had some complaints that they were kind of fuzzy about. I mean, I had people call me. So this is for all of the boards and commissions that deal with complaints, and I think the Board of Nursing has put together a program that could be used as a model. Now, I'm not sure that they currently go as far as we are asking them to, but I think that it's important that there is that transparency and people can actually track a complaint that they make on any board that deals with citizen.
I'm thinking that it would be nice to have Alicia Juber come and at least give us her testimony regarding why we are even considering legislation like this, because she is the one, the champion of why this has all happened and why we need to start looking at how we treat those who have harmed our patients.
Madam Chair, Senator Mona Sanderson, honorable members of the committee, thank you for what you just said. That's very profound to me that you said that. Prior to my reading my testimony, I would like also to say that I went to board meetings starting in the summer of 06 after the newspaper brought out information that I didn't even know about regarding the board. I went to task force meetings as well, and I left believing nothing had changed nor would change since 1998 or 99, when the two members that I think they're wonderful people, I'm not vindictive, but Joan Bouchard and Kim Cobrain were at the board when they allowed the nurse who was alleged to put four people to sleep, one dying, they allowed his license to lapse. This man could go to another state and get a license. And if people don't think to go online, then, you know, I mean, if that's the only way, because there's nothing that I'm aware of, and nobody has told me there's anything that I'm aware of, in his files regarding what transpired at Sheridan Care. I also know that one person works on the board for licensing administrative people. The other works with ombudsman, I believe. They both work with long-term care people. They walked out of task force meetings because when they tried to bring up the idea of the nurse monitoring program being being taken over by another agency, and even Mr. Shepherd at the
You need to introduce yourself for the record.
I'm so sorry.
I know you've talked with all of us, and I forgot
I'm
to have
so
you there.
I'm sorry. My name is Alicia Juber, and I represent my father, John Avery. And I wanted to read a quote also at the beginning of this, because when I walked into this building, I looked up just beyond the seal, and I saw, in the soul of its citizens will be found the likeness of the state. That was very profound to me. There's more to it, but that really hit me. But I wanted to state that at the very first task force meeting, Kim Cobrain, the moderator for the meeting, said that it would be open, transparent discussion on everything that was presented. That included the nurse monitoring task, the nurse monitoring. Basically, I thought the whole thing was about the task force. Mr. Shepherd said at that first meeting, I heard him, I wrote it down, that he wondered if it was not an important thing to talk about, that the nurse monitoring program be outside the Board of Nursing's auspices. Both those ladies said the same thing, and they were shut down by board members. They were not allowed to continue it at any point when they tried to bring it up. That's what made me believe that it was not going to change. It had not changed. And when I found out, because I didn't go to any more board meetings until the very last one, that they had walked out for that very reason, I became again extremely concerned for public safety. Now, with that said, I'll read this.
Before she starts reading. Sorry. Ms. Juber, I think we've all read your material. And it certainly will be going into record. Just like to hear you just talk. But one thing that you should know right now, I am so sorry about what happened to your dad. And as a member of the state legislature, I do offer my apologies in a public way. But you've won. You have won. These changes that are taking place today would not have been here for the exception of Alicia Juber. These changes will force the Board of Nursing to be careful how they walk, they talk, and how they do business from this day forward. You have also butted to the state's official means. This is the people's legislature. Mm-hmm. If there is ever shame on any board, it comes before this body. And you have successfully done that. You got the Attorney General's attention. You got the Governor's attention. You've gotten Senator Morissette's attention, who's before this committee. And Senator Morissette was so you know, profoundly affected by what you brought to him that it has made changes in my committee and is making changes in this committee. So in that sense, what you set out to do has been accomplished, because no longer can the Board of Nursing just decide to do as they want to do. Mr. Shepherd, as the legal mind in this situation, has said what he said, there is no danger to the public health, safety, or welfare. And if those two things are violated, they come up. With strict, very strict oversight if this ever happens again. And even though it might sound a little trite to you at this point, because unless you've lost a parent like I have and like you have, it's hard for people to understand what it is to lose a parent. It's very hard. And so this morning, my heart joins with yours in dealing with the pain of this. But they can no longer ignore the fact when one of their own go contrary to the ethics, the moral and ethical requirement of reporting without some kind of penalty against them for such action. And again, what I was going to say about being trite, no, we cannot bring your father back. But it is in your father's name that this state legislature is acting to make sure that another Alicia Juber is not before us again because of any kind of unethical activity on the part of a person, a servant, who is really working on behalf of the people. So I'm hoping that this will be of some solace to you as you tread these days ahead for yourself, in knowing that you have been able to put at peace the fact that this cannot happen to another person's father. And I hope that you can accept this peace and move on with your life, because you will be etched in their memory as the face, the profile of a person who changed how they react and interact among their own.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Carter, would it be okay if I went ahead and read this? It's relatively short. Madam Chair, would
yes,
it be okay
please.
If I read this? Thank you. I understand there are only three words in Bill 433 amending the existing law, safety or welfare. Because of my personal past experience with the Board of Nursing, they have not garnered much trust from me, and I'm very glad these words regarding the public's health, safety, and welfare are being added to the bill. Though safety and welfare, not for welfare, would seem more appropriate. Both words are vital because the very nature of the many reasons a licensed nurse would go into treatment for chemical or emotional problems, the least being access to medication. The types of patients they will have the opportunity to work with dictates the necessity for extreme safety for those patients, while also considering the difficulty of fighting the demons of addiction for the nurse. A nurse voluntarily seeking help should not be penalized, only monitored very closely. I would also like to put on record for discussion at another time my concerns with words in the law as it stands. Number three and section one. The confidential aspects of the monitoring program and reports not being admissible in any judicial proceeding troubles me if there is a history or pattern law enforcement needs to know about while investigating a case. I realize there are times when these laws have been circumvented for that purpose, but the wording of the law makes it seem without exception and more difficult for criminal investigations. I respect confidentiality, but the stigma of mental illness and addiction are not the taboo subjects they used to be, and job security should not be threatened if nurses are not a threat to patients and their care. But how could law enforcement do their job, which could clear a nurse, if not given some history held confidential? I respect the fear a person has believing others could know their secrets, but that's what keeps an addict sick. It wouldn't be known unless there was a discipline problem in the first place, correct? Then number four, is confusing as to whether a relapse would be considered the same offense and therefore not subject to investigation or disciplinary action, even if the licensee complies with terms and conditions. How many relapses are allowed, especially if happening on the job? My final thought is rather controversial with members of the Board of Nursing and some legislators. I don't believe the Board of Nursing should monitor their members or themselves. Monitor programs run by outside agencies have proven to work in Washington, Florida, Oklahoma. There could be more, I don't know. I believe there are state boards in Oregon also overseen by people not on the same board. It works because an outside agency can do the job more efficiently, not appearing to be protecting members instead of the public. That keeps the board's valuable time for education and all the other jobs necessary to care for the 99% of nurses who don't struggle with addiction and mental health issues. Then Bill 433 and the law it amends would be a moot point. Thank you for listening to my concerns, and I would appreciate any clarification of points I have mentioned if I speak in error, if you have the time.
Yes. I'd like to have Pete Shepherd tell us why in line 9 we have public health, safety, or welfare when it should be, when, as Ms. Juber said, why wasn't it and? Explain that, because we want all three, not one or the other.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I actually think the more protective standard of the public interest is to have any of the three, not all of the three simultaneously.
Right. Yeah.
And for that reason, I think I agree with Ms. Juber's intent in raising the question, but I actually think or is the correct word in line 9, because what it then means is that the individual, the board must make a separate judgment as to whether the candidate is presents no danger to the public health, and then separately whether the candidate presents no danger to the public safety, and separately again no danger to the public welfare. That's the more protective standard than if the standard said and, then the disqualifying condition would be all three of them together.
So that is on record that the intent of this is exactly what Ms. Juber had intended, that each one, not
Madam Chair, I agree with Pete. Quite simply, if it's and in there, you'd have to prove all three rather than a single one. So, or is the appropriate word there.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's a form of art.
For a second, because I did think about that as I was reading it, and I thought to myself, people don't realize if you steal something from an elderly person, my dad had 2 stuffed animals stolen from him. It devastated him. It affected his health, because he was so sad that he'd had those stolen, and members of the staff got him one more, and then I brought him another one, and then he was much happier. So it's sometimes hard to understand how welfare might actually be part of their physical health if something is stolen from them. So I don't know a lot about writing and what have you. But as just a public layperson out here reading it, it really did seem like it was separating those to me. So mm-hmm. that's just, mm-hmm. and I'm not that wise, so.
No, you are.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
The first conversation I had with Mr. Shepherd, Pete, was about who should do the monitoring. And we had, I thought, a fairly good discussion whether or not it should be the AG's office or some other independent agency. I know that different states have different models, and I think a lot of it boils down to funding. If we're going to do an adequate, we don't do an adequate job as it is with the monitoring program that we have, but I think that that's a standalone conversation. Do you have any thoughts on?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, as Ms. Juber has indicated and as Senator Morissette has said, the question of whether a different entity should than the board itself should have responsibility for overseeing compliance with the nurse monitoring program conditions or perhaps even admission to the program mm-hmm. was an explicit point that we thought about. I've indicated to Senator Morissette and to the board that we don't think the Department of Justice is the right place to do that because we really do think there are judgments to be made that are best made by persons with knowledge and experience in the field. And frankly, the Department of Justice, we're darn good lawyers, but we're lousy nurses. And so we really don't bring to bear instinctively or by training the background necessary to make a full well-rounded judgments about this area of regulation. And so for that reason, we didn't recommend that the Department of Justice take over the operation. You'll see in the report, we do address the question of division of responsibilities for managing the nurse monitoring program, and in fact, within the Board of Nursing structure, there are separate sections that are responsible for discipline from those that are responsible for monitoring participants in the nurse monitoring program.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Senator Birdley.
Have we taken a look at other states? Ms. Juber references Washington, Florida and Oklahoma. Have we at least taken a look at the other states to see how their programs work, how they're funded, and what can we learn?
Madam Chair, Senator Gordley, we haven't, with Department of Justice at any rate, have not examined in detail the other programs except to be aware that there are other models. And I don't know whether the Board of Nursing staff have examined that issue in detail.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Madam Chair. It would seem to me that before we arrive at final judgment, at least this is where I am at this moment, we would want to look at other states and we would want to explore the feasibility of an independent approach. Let's look at that.
Yeah.
Let's bring forward some information that would help us make the best public policy decision as we look at how we're going to proceed, the best public policy decision.
Madam Chair, may I, please? I mentioned that's a standalone issue that we didn't really have time to deal with when we were, but I agree with you. I think we should look at other states, and I guess we need to figure out how we're going to do that if we have a committee staff person gather information on this possibility.
But that is something that this bill is not addressing, and so I'd like to move on in the interest of time on that issue, but I think that is an issue that we actually need the Board of Nursing to be, because I have been a part of the task force meetings in which it was discussed, and a lot of it did come down to funding. But we still need to have that conversation. And just briefly, there are two other areas regarding the confidentiality on number 3 on line 12 and number 14 on line 4. Could you address those, Mr. Shepherd?
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the committee. There is an issue that arises out of federal law that is a problem in terms of the free flow of information about people who are already who have been admitted to participate in the nurse monitoring program, and that issue arises from the fact that a federal statute provides that if a state does establish for medical professionals a program like the nurse monitoring program, that by virtue of having established that program, it then becomes subject to these federal confidentiality requirements, which overlay the state law, and of course take precedence over state law, and specifically It's the statute is 42 U.S.C. section 290, little dd dash 2, and what it says is that these state programs are subject to confidentiality under the federal statute if they relate to substance abuse treatment which is conducted, regulated, or directly or indirectly assisted by any department or agency of the United States. And we've advised the Board of Nursing that because there are elements of its operation that are assisted by directly or indirectly by agencies or departments of the United States, that their nurse monitoring program is subject to that federal confidentiality statute. So we're not free as a matter of state law because of the existence of this federal statute to change the, significantly change anyway, the confidentiality requirements that attach to participation, folks who are actually participating in the program.
But didn't we do something about AIDS and all of a sudden the reporting of that has changed, or are you aware?
Madam Chair, I'm afraid I'm not aware. Of
okay, I'm trying to remember.
Madam Chair, these provisions are identical to like the BME program. I mean, this is, as Pete said, simply because they're federal law, and so we've had to align ourselves with that. So, that's pretty standard for this sort of program. And I'd also point out, Madam Chair, that we created these programs, and not that long ago. So I think this is a nice fix to something that we overlooked when we did it. So this is us correcting ourselves. And I'd also say for the record that I support the programs, right, that we have a way for people in the medical profession, both here and in other venues, to deal with their problems. And to a large degree, the confidentiality for the majority of these people, being a recovering person myself, I know I don't want this stuff out in public. I want my program, because it's a very rough confrontation with self as you go through this, and virtually any sort of treatment program you go in, you have this sort of confidentiality. So even in the private sector.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
I think that piece is as much of a problem as what Ms. Juber said, that when board does not use expediency, mm-hmm, in what they do, and rather than a sanction a person, allow their license to lapse. I mean, that seems to me the rub here. The confidentiality is something that we as a society should always want to hold up. But what's egregious here is, Pete, if we could have done something about the fact when a complaint is issued against the person, what is the time that lapsed between the board's action and that person being sanctioned versus being allowed to let the license lapse, so that they go on scot-free with nothing in record about them? That's the egregious act, it would appear to me.
Madam Chair, Senator Carter, I'm going to defer answering that to someone from the Board of Nursing, because really they can give you the more well-rounded answer to that.
Right. Committee, we are getting away from what the purpose of this bill is, and in the interest of time, I would like to ask, is there any more conversation toward this bill in particular? I want to focus on this bill because I want to get that. All right. Okay.
Very briefly, I just wish to also state that I also am in recovery, and I highly respect the confidentiality and somehow to work it that if there's a criminal investigation, that would not have to go public, but it would give the law enforcement some way to know if there's pattern. That's because I respect confidentiality as much as...
Thank you so much, Ms. Juber and Pete. Mr. Shepard and Senator Morissette. I'd like to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 433, and I'd like to open a work session on Senate Bill 433.
Madam Chair, refresh my memory about the and or discussion. Are we?
This is the most conservative.
Thank you.
Yes.
Then, Madam Chair, I move that Senate Bill 433 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Gordley moves Senate Bill 433 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
Senator Carter.
Aye.
Senator Courtney.
Yes.
Senator Cruz.
Aye.
Senator Gordley.
Aye.
Chair Mons Anderson.
Aye. Motion passed. And I would like to ask Senator Morissette to please carry the bill. And with that, no further, meetings adjourned.